From GPB News, this is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. All this weekend, Athens will dance. I went to school, but I never took. Heard tunes from T. Hardy Morris, 5'8", and Future Birds. All of them will perform at AthFest this weekend. It's a yearly music festival that takes over downtown Athens. And we wonder, is there a festival that you go to every year? What is it, and why do you love it? Call us at 404-500-9457, find us on Twitter at OST Talk or on Facebook, and we might feature your comments on the show. We're used to hearing that indie artists are hard to label, but in the case of Athens musician Kishibashi, it's really true. His first solo album creates thick soundscapes with violin and vocal loops. His voice transitions quickly from low pitches to falsetto. Kishibashi is a pseudonym for Kaoru Ishibashi. He released his third album, Sonderlust, last fall. I caught up with him ahead of a performance in Atlanta.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're actually on a tour bus, are you not? Traveling from Athens to Atlanta?
Yes, we're in a truck stop somewhere in Alabama, I believe.
Well, I appreciate you're pulling over.
At
what point did you know the music thing was going to work, that you didn't need a backup plan?
that's a pretty big question. When I was 30, I'm 40 now, but when I was 36, I moved out of New York City to kind of give it a last-ditch effort, you know, as far as making music for a living, and that was my debut album. So, I guess a few years ago,
it was a last-ditch effort that really paid off.
I think so, but you know, who knows? It couldn't. I'm sure there are alternate life paths that could have happened.
We have some clips of your music to play, and so I kind of want to do them in chronological order. So let's go back to 2011. This is the song Manchester.
Page. I didn't even look. I think I locked it in a cage. Wrote a novel.
You know, I feel like a lot of people describe some of your music, especially some of this early stuff, as soundscapes, which I reject personally because it's a song and then backings. But I wonder what you start with. Do you start with the mood or the sound, or do you start with just the song?
I'm a musician first, instrumentalist, so it's all music. So I kind of create, you know, I guess I do create soundscapes. I create sound and then I force a song into it. Usually is how it works.
So, and then do the lyrics, are they the last thing?
They're always the last. So words for me, like the words float out as kind of like instruments, you know, themselves. And then as strong words form for like the choruses, that's where I turn them into stories.
So I want to hear how your music transforms when you're actually playing mostly acoustically, and in this case, live. This is from what became a very popular Tiny Desk concert for NPR from 2012. This is I Am the Antichrist to You.
Falling.
do you choose your playlists for each venue? How do you change it up?
You mean like a set list?
Yeah.
I think, honestly, I keep the same set list for the entire tour a lot of times, because I like to think of it as a play. You know, when you're like, when you take a Broadway show on the road, it's like they don't change up the story, you know. So I kind of evolve it and perfect it, and, you know, and have like moments. A lot of times there'll be little differences, but for the most part, I like to keep the same set list.
That implies that you choose a set list based and you think it's telling a story, right?
Yeah, there's an arc to it. You know, there's a lot of like, it'll start with like maybe new songs, or it'll start with things, or I'll have things to talk about, and then I'll have like a little theater. You know, there's a couple theatrical elements in it too, you know. So, but I feel like I don't feel bad about repeating the same set list because there is an arc.
Right. So let's then move forward to the new album. And this is one of the bigger tracks off of it. This is Hey Big Star from the new album Sunderlust. So this one was produced by Chris Taylor of Grizzly Bear. How did his production change your sound, do you think?
I think the reason why I approached him was that he has great taste, and I needed somebody to kind of ground me in a more simple production. So I needed somebody to basically tell me that you don't need all these crazy elements that you might have added in the past.
It sounds like you felt like you needed an editor.
Yeah, that's what a producer is a lot of times.
And there's this sound. I mean, there's an element of risk to the sound in this music. Like, it's almost as though each track is just this side of spinning out of control.
Thanks.
That's a good thing, to my mind. But you call it the musical equivalent of Fumes. And I wonder what you mean by that.
Oh, Fumes. Okay. When I was creating the earlier, like my past two albums have been violin centric, meaning that I would compose them from the violin. But this time around, it was writing new songs, it became the musical equivalent of Fumes, meaning like that there were. Really, it wasn't inspiring to me, so I took a totally different approach, and I composed a lot electronically and through the keyboards.
Okay, so you say it wasn't inspiring to you, and I assume you're referring to, you've said that you were sort of at an impasse before this album, and the way you describe it sounds like you were like the musician's version of writer's block?
So what was happening was that because my first two albums were pretty well received, and you know, a lot of people were kind of, I assumed that a lot of my listeners were expecting a similar sound. So as I approached the compositional process and the songwriting process, I just found that I couldn't come up with anything that was interesting to myself, which is like the worst way, worst position to be in. So, because that would translate into the album. So I took a totally new approach.
And what was that breakthrough moment for you?
I think there's the kind of catharsis when I understood that the music, that this album would just be a snapshot of, you know, of my life, and it wouldn't be a continuation of my previous work. It's basically an album for an artist is just that moment in time.
And this moment in time seems to have come from a place, you called it a place of heartbreak, which it sounds like your success. Maybe, I don't want to assume anything, but maybe you weren't quite prepared for the rigors of touring or how exhausting musical success could be. Is that fair?
I mean, touring is basically it's a lot of it has to do with my family and just touring and my marriage essentially. It's a difficult thing for me to even talk about, but it is like. It's definitely in there, like as far as like the lyrically, I really found an avenue to pour out my emotions into the lyrics.
And that's just kind of the line where I want to take a moment to explore, because you say it's difficult for you to talk about, and yet you're such a romantic musically, and you basically just wear your heart on your sleeve. And if you're touring, that means you're pouring these lyrics out night after night after night, city after city after city. What's the difference between that and talking about it?
Well, because, you know, I'm a musician and not an orator, you know, so it's difficult for me to talk about like it with words. But as far as emotion, when I'm on stage, it's like I make my music for my listeners. So I open myself up as much as possible.
And that's not as difficult. That's less painful. Is it actually therapeutic?
It's definitely therapeutic. There's a lot of emotions because every time I sing certain songs, I do feel there's a lot of pain involved. But, you know, it's like it's with any art, the more personal it is, the better it is.
You told our producers that your last concert was kind of low energy and you're wondering if people were worn out from Halloween. Is that right?
Yeah, we just had a show in New Orleans last night and you're like, every time we go to New Orleans, you know, you think everybody just wants to party all the time.
Screaming,
but, you know,
but
we played a show the day after Halloween and it was definitely subdued, surprisingly.
Yeah, and your energy is so, well, for me anyway, it's hard to listen to without smiling. It's very joyful. And how does that change your performance, do you think? How does the audience's behavior or their attitude change the way you play?
If the energy is not high, then it might affect us psychologically. I'm sure musically we're all like trained musicians, you know. So I feel like it probably doesn't affect the actual show. Some of the banter might change, you know,
right?
Between songs.
Yeah. It's become more morose. Let's hear another clip from the new album. This is Say Yeah. We got about 30 seconds left. Do you feel like the writer's block has gone? Has that demon been banished?
I don't know. I kind of approach it as like case by case basis. So you can probably ask me before I start writing for the next album.
That's Athens musician Kishibashi talking about his latest album, Sonderlust. He's up for Best Album of the Year in the Flagpole Music Awards, which happened tonight at the Morton Theater in Athens. Just ahead, Cindy Wilson of the B-52s goes it alone. But first, the Future Birds add two more tunes to our Georgia playlist. This is On Second Thought. It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. Macon has launched the careers of legendary musicians like Greg Allman and Otis Redding, and many others, of course. But Macon was also home to many unsung musical heroes, and one tour company makes every effort to give them their due. Jamie Weatherford and Jessica Walden are a husband and wife team who run Rock Candy Tours. They offer guided visits of historical music sites in Macon. I spoke with them last year.
One of the ones that first pops in my mind, just in terms of the local scene or somebody that's such a tremendous impact, would be Johnny Jenkins. Johnny Jenkins and Phil Walden, who is best known as the founder of Capricorn Records, had a career that was intertwined together forever. But Johnny Jenkins also played an instrumental role in launching the career of Otis Redding.
Let's actually hear from Johnny Jenkins.
Yeah.
So, Jamie, how did Johnny Jenkins help launch Otis Redding into fame?
Well, when Phil Walden first started what is known as Phil Walden Artist and Promotions in 1958, one of the first bands that he started booking was a band called Johnny Jenkins and the Pine Toppers. And in the background of this band, actually, as a backup singer, was Otis Redding. And it was through this relationship that Phil and Otis created that eventually Otis Redding would actually become a partner with Phil Walden in Phil Walden Artist and Promotions. And to our knowledge, that was the first integrated owned business in the city of Macon. Otis was 17 years old and Phil was 18 years old. And together, they would manage and book the careers of a lot of tremendous R&B artists out of Macon, Georgia, including Sam and Dave, Percy Sledge, Ike and Tina Turner, The Meters, Clarence Carter. They had a tremendous roster of great Southern soul artists. And, of course, Otis Redding himself would become the king of soul by 1967.
Normally, this would be where Jessica, where I'd say there's no relation between Jessica and Phil Walden, but that's not true.
All roads lead back to Macon, and for me, it comes back to a family tree. And my this is where the course of my family's history changed. My uncle, Phil Walden, was my father's older brother, and he fell madly in love with what was called Race Records at the time, and ultimately took the whole family with him into the music industry. And, of course, really shaking things up here in Macon, Georgia.
Did you ever have conversations about what it was he loved so much, what he heard? He seemed to have an incredible ear for talent.
He really did. It's something that I ask myself all the time. He just had this unbridled passion for music. I mean, he was just a fanatic about it. And when you look at how many, he just had that ability to spot talent. And it wasn't just in the artist. Of course, he had Otis Redding, and then lightning struck twice again with Duane Allman. But it was also in the what we've discovered with Rock Candy Tours and the music executives that he brought along, finding Frank Finner and sweet-talking him to come from the UK to Macon, Georgia, finding a guy who had an idea for an art concept on a T-shirt and basically started the music merchandise industry. Uncle Phil really did know how to spot him, and it really was his love for music that just kind of absorbed all these people and just created this music mecca in Macon.
Okay, so Jamie, tell us about another musician who maybe doesn't have the headlines that, say, Duane Allman or Greg Allman or Otis Redding had.
Well, one that seems to be coming popular again is a gentleman named Emmett Miller, and Emmett was born in Macon and was best known basically as a minstrel singer, which is sort of a connection between some of the vaudeville days and country music. And Emmett Miller, particularly his version of Lovesick Blues, was a tremendous inspiration to Hank Williams and Merle Haggard. And he seems to be receiving some recognition again now, sort of being remembered for his contribution to American music.
Well, let's take a listen. This is Lovesick Blues as recorded by Emmett Miller in 1928.
I'm in love with a beautiful gal, but she don't care about me. To make her love me, I tried, Lord, I was sad and I cried, but she just refused.
So now let's listen to Hank Williams' rendition of that same song.
I got a feeling of the blues, oh Lord, since my baby said goodbye.
Jessica, how did your family and others attract so many musicians to Macon, even those who were not born there?
That's another thing that, you know, every time we give a tour, we even have to step back and ask ourselves, what was it about Macon, Georgia? But I really do believe it was Phil's love for this town. He could have been anywhere. He could have been in Los Angeles. He could have been in the other M's, Muscle Shoals and Memphis. But he really did plant a flag in Macon. And, you know, there was this sleepy southern town that just seemed to inspire this great bit of creativity. People ask me all the time, you know, what is your favorite part of all this? And my favorite stories are the ones that involved rhythm and blues, because I mean, they were doing great things together in the backdrop where black and white people weren't allowed to be together in public spaces, especially in the South. And they really had a fearless ability to still create. And that was their way of changing the social fabric, was through writing songs and recording together and bringing instruments together and then ultimately making people dance together. The Reddings and the Waldens, we are family to this day. And my dad and Otis bought properties adjacent to each other so they could be out in the country and ride horses and fish together. And, you know, that sense of kinship is just, it's lasted through time and tragedy.
So, Jamie, by the time we get to the 1980s, the music scene in Macon kind of fades out. What happened?
The New Wave movement, which is interesting because a lot of the New Wave acts were built by a subsidiary of Capricorn Records called Paragon Booking Agency. So a lot of the bands that you're familiar with, the Go-Go's, the Bangles, Debbie Harry, Iggy Pop, they were actually being booked out of Macon, Georgia. But Phil and Frank Finner of Capricorn Records just didn't really see much of a future in that. And Mike Mills and Bill Berry were not born in Macon, but these are half of the band REM. And together, they kind of were trying to create a punk scene with Ian Copeland, who was a booking agent. And around 1979, the B-52s started finding success in Athens. And it was Mike Mills and Bill decided it was time to give another city a shot. And basically from 1979 to about 1982, that's when most of the infrastructure, the executive infrastructure of Macon began to leave. And that's basically when Athens started becoming Athens and Macon started becoming Macon. I would like to point out, though, that REM had a lot of help from Ian Copeland, who, of course, was from Macon, Georgia. And then Widespread Panic was founded by Philip Walden Jr., Phil's son. So while Athens' two most successful early bands were having success, they were still being helped out tremendously by Macon. So I'm going to tell Athens they owe us a debt of gratitude.
Well, I think they hear you at this point. But Jessica, before we go, what about the structures? We've heard a lot about some of the endangered historical structures in Macon. Are they going to be preserved?
Yes, this is an exciting time in Macon, Georgia. We really began this tour company to tell the story of these places that we did feel like were endangered. The Capricorn Studio was listed by the Georgia Trust as one of the top 10 places in peril in 2010. And it was announced that the Capricorn Studio is going to be brought back to life. I think a lot of our future in Macon is going to stand well on the shadows of this legendary past and hopefully inspire some new talent along the way.
That's Jessica Walden and Jamie Weatherford. They run Rock Candy Tours in Macon. It's time to add two more songs to our Georgia playlist. For this, we ask people to pick the best songs from or about Georgia. And the rules are simple. The tunes have to be written or performed by a Georgian, and musicians can't pick one of their own songs. All This Week will feature tunes chosen by musicians performing at Athfest this weekend. Indie rock band Future Birds are headlining the festival. Guitarist Thomas Johnson brings us these picks.
Hi, I'm Thomas Johnson. I play guitar in Future Birds. My first pick for the Georgia playlist is a song called Cocaine Parties by the Star Room Boys.
There's a way that we know we got lucky, the luck to pass. There's a way that we feel when the world is through kicking our ass.
yeah, it's just a song that we all love. It's, you know, it's a classic love song, but it's also just, there's so much bad country music out there. They're not even telling stories, it seems like, anymore. It's not storytelling or you know, heartbreak. It's just like random things strung together in succession to rhyme, and sometimes they're not even rhyming, you know. It's just like, you know, some chunky guitar and a hell yeah or something like that, you know. But so it was just kind of like a reaffirming, just like, all right, there's still good southern music being made that is country, you know, that's not necessarily rock and roll. There's tons of great southern rock out there, but it's maybe my favorite song of Starroom Boys, so I just figured that was a good one to pick. It's got a ripping solo in it, which is nice too. So
I've been there two times before, and I'm still around. There's a bittersweet peace in your mind when you're through keeping score.
Dave Marr's voice is very cool. You know, he doesn't get super high or super low in it, but he's just got this super warm voice that just sounds awesome, and the lyrics are quintessential Athens in a way. That's about, you know, a girl who kind of maybe more interested in partying than having a relationship or something. But it's just a song that the lyrics hit home, and it just has a nice feel to it.
With your faraway eyes and your cigarette ashes so long.
My next pick for the Georgia playlist is a song called Blackout Curtain by Now It's Overhead. Oh man, it's like a, kind of starts out with this like offbeat drum part and all these synths coming in, and it kind of has some, you know, big guitar chords and just kind of builds up to this chorus, and then everything cuts out and it's this really pretty vocal melodies saying, "Don't ever go away from me, I won't ever go away," is what it says, and it's just like this really cool kind of yearning, but it's very sincere and like almost, it's urgent, you know, it's like a plea.
A gentle, softer sound.
At least once, every time we do a big long tour, that song pops up, somebody throws it on a playlist, and it's just one of those, it's just, I consider it a vibey tour song, you know, it's just, the lyrics of that song seem to have a lot of deep meaning, you know, it's a pretty, like, intense song, but yeah, the vibe of the song is super, super cool, and it's got a great melody, and it's just one of those songs that kind of feels like Athens, and kind of reminds me of home, and reminds all of us of home.
Blackout curtain draw.
You know, I think it's just him being a young man, just figuring shit out and trying to sift through the complex, you know, the increasingly complex nature of relationships as you get older and older, as, you know, more things come into the fold and there's more things going on in your life and there's less room for what's already there and, you know, more desire to seek out new things. And I think it's just about, you know, wanting to do both, you know, kind of put yourself out there and become the person that you want to be, but also hold on to the things that are dear to you.
There's harsher day sunlight.
That's Thomas Johnson of the band Future Birds. They perform at Athfest on the main stage tomorrow night at 9 p.m. And if you have a song that you want to add to the Georgia playlist, we want to hear about it. You can call us at 404-500-9457 or tweet us at OST Talk, and then find the entire Georgia playlist series along with all the great music segments that we've done at gpbnews.org. Just ahead, one member of the B-52s is taking new music on the road. This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. This is On Second Thought. Musician Cindy Wilson is a bona fide Georgia legend. She was born and raised in Athens, and she's a co-founder of the band, the B-52s. It's been 9 years since the release of the B-52s' last album, but Cindy Wilson has been busy. She's on tour with songs from an EP called Sunrise and a forthcoming solo album called Change. She talked to me last year about her new album and life as a solo artist.
Hi, Celeste. How you doing?
I mean, I have to assume a lot of people are asking you why finally the solo album. I mean, because Kate also eventually, finally,
you know,
both of you.
Well, you know, I think these days baby boomers, musicians are picking up the guitars and keep on being creative. It's really important to do that, you know. Keep doing it. Just don't retire. And by the way, the B-52s, we're going to have our 40th.
Tour.
Yeah, we're still touring. And this will be our 40th anniversary coming
Holy
up
cow.
This coming year, 2017. And we're still playing. We're doing different types of gigs, like symphony gigs with different city symphonies, and we're going to Australia and New Zealand at the end of January, you know, so we keep on keeping on. And so everybody has side projects, and this is my little solo side project, and it's we've had the best time writing and working with these people, you know.
Is it a matter of time management, because you have been very successful actually at both keeping the B-52s going all these years, but also taking the time out when you needed for raising a family yeah. and having a balanced life.
Do you end up now
the kids are older?
Oh yes, they're now 17 and 20.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's amazing, you know. I can't believe where the time's gone, you know. But you know, they're great kids, and you know, and I was lucky to be able to be in a cool band that you know, they, you know, understood, you know,
they
left
you
the door
and
open,
come back when you needed.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of times, especially back in the day, that didn't happen, you know. So, but you know, it's kind of a democratic band, and everybody's pretty cool.
So let's actually hear some of the new material. This is, again, right now there's an EP available. The album is called Change,
mm-hmm.
and this song is called Sunrise.
Yes.
So this is a really different sound from
it's
the B-52s.
Departure.
Yeah, it's like you have a different vocal tone.
Burger. Yeah, yeah, it's a departure.
More like a psychedelic, smooth.
Yeah, very, very, yeah, very smooth and quiet and kind of. It's a lot of fun. I've been playing around and getting a different style. And Suni Lyons and Ryan Monahan and Lemuel Hayes and Marie Devon. We've gotten the show together, and it flows. It's just like this, but it doesn't stop after every song. It's like some kind of theater piece, and it's really been interesting.
And you have like a video component that looks almost like a kaleidoscope.
Right. Yes, and it keeps a mixed media thing going, and it's very kind of arty, and I really enjoy it doing it, you know.
How different was it? I mean, after playing with one band for so long, how difficult was it to then get new habits and hear new styles coming from a whole different band?
Well, I love it. This, being the B-52s, we did get to be creative and do different types of things. But this is a totally different. And yeah, it's wonderful because, I'm blessed that the B-52s, are having a long career and makes people happy. And that's really wonderful. But this is a great thing to be able to come in and conjure up new feelings and new, just new creative muscles, so I'm really loving it, and we're getting a lot of good feedback too.
If you're just joining me, I'm speaking with Miss Cindy Wilson, of course, of the B-52s, but she is currently on tour with songs from her forthcoming album, Change. Are you going to be touring with this at the same time that you have tour dates for the B-52s?
We're doing it. The way the B-52s are touring these days are we're doing clusters of gigs. It's not like one long tour.
Yeah.
So, and that's how we keep, the B-52s going and everybody working is like working clusters a couple of times a month and keeping it going, And we have, thank goodness that we can do that. And the phone keeps ringing for the B-52s.
So, I'm sure.
So that's great. And it's a new way of doing it. So you can have a life. You don't have to just constantly be on tour. You do like three shows and go back home. And
well, let me ask about that life, because look, here's the thing. Mm-hmm. First of all, very few bands could last 40 years without getting in arguments and breaking up.
Oh, well, it's any group of people, you get a group of people, it's going to be like that.
Right, especially if you're on a tour bus together.
Yes, it starts stinking on the bus. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, it's fun. There's everybody's a genius and everybody's a devil, I love everybody, but you're right. It's very hard to keep your space, and continue on, but we've done it, and it's because of how cool everybody is,
You were the major part of all the writing for the B-52s.
Yeah, we write together, but it's different songs are different approaches to it. We've even had friends write for us lyrics, So we shake it up, but for the most part, a typical way to do it would like Funplex, when we wrote Funplex, which was our last record that we did. It took us so long because how we work, Keith Strickland brought music in, and Kate, Fred, and I would jam for half a day on this music, and then we have to sift through all that and see what direction we're going in, and it kind of takes. It's kind of interesting because trying to make a cohesive song out of kind of multiple views, and it's kind of interesting. It's like somebody writes one part of the story, another person writes another, and that's how we get the vocal melodies and the harmonies, and you never know what's going to turn up, so it's
that's
been really
odd. I didn't think of the B-52s as a jam band, but you were saying that you kind of
in the
wrote
studio.
By jamming. Yeah, and then there's the iconic, that legendary story of the way that you guys first got started, which you were sitting in a Chinese restaurant called Hunan and drinking flaming volcanoes.
Yes, that was our first inspiration. I met Fred and Kate at a Halloween before that, but we went out to eat. It was Ricky, Keith, Kate, and Fred, and I, and another friend. And we we didn't have much money, so we went to a Chinese restaurant and we bought this flaming volcano drink.
Which is a huge drink where they literally light it on fire.
Very strong rum, by the way. And with the sterno on top, and so it's like a really cool, it's, fiery and everything. And everybody had a straw, and there was a moat around it, so everybody was drinking. And we were just cutting up and having a good time. So we ended up going back to our friend's house in their basement and picking up instruments.
Do you know what time it was at that point?
It was fairly early. We stayed down there in the basement and jammed for a long time
and wrote some songs.
Yeah, in fact, Rock Lobster was part of it, a germ of an idea, I believe. Fred, you know, and Fred was a poet, and his play on words are really fun, you know. It's amazing. So he had all these, like, amazing imagery of a party in the ocean. And Kate and I would make sounds and everything and kind of background girl, you know, vocals and everything, and just kind of have fun with it. And then we decided, well, we have to play a party. This is just too funny, you know. And so we ended up playing a friend's Valentine's party, you know, in Athens, you know, which I met my future husband there, and that's the first place the B-52s ever played.
Do you remember how much you got paid?
We didn't get paid.
Oh, you didn't?
No, it wasn't anything like that. And everybody was dancing. It was so much fun, you know.
So what was your first paid gig?
Well, you pay to play at the beginning, and we went up to CBGB's up in New York, and Max's Kansas City, I think, was the first, and then Hurrah's, and that was when we had released a independent single, and that got around, and we looked out the window right after soundcheck, and there was a line around the block, and then that's when we knew that something was starting to happen for us, the B-52s, and then after that, we got signed, you know, and it was pretty exciting stuff, you know.
So you stayed in Athens. You stayed at, well, you still have a house in Athens, but you decided to stay in Georgia. In fact, I read in one.
No, that's not what happened. What happened was we all moved to New York.
Yeah.
Upstate New York.
And came back.
Yeah, we lived up there for about 12 years. My husband and I did.
Uh-huh.
And we lived in Putnam County, Lake Mayapack. And then we moved down to the city and lived there. And in the West Village, which was wonderful. And I get to go back a lot. But
yeah.
And then after my brother passed, I was really want to kind of connect. The B-52s did Cosmic Thing. We wrote Cosmic Thing, and we toured for that for 2 or 3 years. And after that, I kind of had a hankering to come back to Georgia and kind of reconnect to family, you know, which...
And you described yourself in one interview. We're going to hear a little bit more of the music, the new music in a moment, but you described yourself in one interview as just a regular Dunwoody housewife.
No, I'm not a regular Dunwoody housewife.
They quoted you that way, and I thought that's cool. Weird.
Yeah, Dunwoody's cool, you know. It's actually a very, very a healthy, you know, people run there and jog, and it's, you know, it's really pleasant, you know. My kids were raised there, so I'm very fond of that, you know, for Dunwoody.
Well, let's hear a little bit more of the music. This is a song called Brother. The bass line sounds almost B-52X, but then you have the breathy sound of the voice, which we're not used to hearing from you.
Yeah.
How long did it take for you to sort of develop the new aesthetic?
Well, that's interesting. Well, we worked on just coming up with a sound, you know, for the new sound for me and the music. So the whole album has this sound, which is great. And we worked on that for a few months, you know, getting the right thing that we wanted, you know. And it took us about 2 years to, working off and on it, you know, to really come with full album's worth. And it's amazing, you know. I love it. I love it. And it's so much fun to do.
And it is a very different style. I mean, the even the fashion and hair for the B-52s was a major part of what that band is and was.
The freedom to be a freak, you know. Fly your freak flag or whatever, you know. Yeah, we loved the whole aesthetic of just being, you know, have fun and just, you know, just bring it to the stage, you know.
So how does that change? Does that aesthetic really different for your solo album and your new band?
Oh, it's the same thing, really. It's, you know, I'm me, but, you know, I tried to imagine myself being some kind of psychedelic chanteuse, you know. So it's fun.
So is this the first of many?
A first of many what?
Solo albums?
Oh, well, you know, I'm keep on keeping on. You be creative. And I love everybody I'm working with. So it's fabulous. Yeah.
So we have about a minute left, and I'm just wondering about Athens itself. You have a house there still, right?
Actually, I just bought a little bitty place in Five Points. You know, it's got only one bathroom. I mean, I can clean this house myself, you know. And it's great. It's a, you know, so I have like family there, and I'm constantly coming back.
Town?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's creative town. It's artists, musicians. It's amazing, the vibe there, and such nice, such down to earth people. Really nice. I love it. You know, it's very nice to come hang out there.
That is musician Cindy Wilson, of course, of the B-52. She's currently on tour with songs from her forthcoming album, Change. The EP before that is called Sunrise, and we'll get the full solo album later. And we're going to go out on the song Take My Time. Cindy, thank you so much.
You're sweet. Thank you.
Cindy Wilson performs for AthFest at the Georgia Theater tomorrow night at 12:15. And that's our show for today, but tell us about your fantasy lineup. I'm not talking fantasy football, I'm talking fantasy festival. If you were staging a festival, who would you book? Living or dead, doesn't matter. Call us at 404-500-9457. You can also tweet us. The show is at OST Talk, and I'm at Celeste Headley. Our show is produced by Sean Powers, Ryan McFadden, and Trevor Young. Our interns are Charles Lucas and Candace Spates. Our senior producer is Emily Curitan. Tanya Ott is our VP of radio, and our engineer is Tyler Morris. The theme music is Silent Machine by Georgia's own Cat Power. For today, that's on Second Thought from GPB News. Have a great day.